FM.
Yeah, this is Penn Jillette sitting with secret Tour de France rider Michael Goudeau at the Big Free FM. We're in Las Vegas, Nevada, 866-570-PEN, 7366. You know, yesterday I left the show. It was an exciting Monkey Tuesday. And we were very excited about maybe going to New York for Halloween. There was a lot of good laughs. And I went directly from there to get root canal work. I got a root canal done. And they put rubber in my teeth. You know, they didn't squirt that stuff in.
Sure.
And, of course, because we live in a godless universe full of pain, my root canal did not go smoothly and took a long time to kill the nerves in my head. So I was swinging at the wonderful woman who was my doctor for a while. And then I had to be on painkillers. So I had time to think about the world, think about how things were going, think about things bigger than myself. And I decided that today we're going to dive in over our heads, Mr. Goudeau. We're going to talk about stuff that we know nothing about and that we're confused about. We usually try to keep it on subjects, you know, the show. They always say write about what you know. And I think on radio you should talk about what you know. So we talk about funny monkeys and juggling, which is really all we know. But we're gonna branch out and talk about. And the reason I'm going to use this word next is because of Dennis Miller. You know, Dennis Miller has so much joy in saying this word that I'm going to see if I like it too. We're going to talk about Gitmo. You like that? Yeah. You know,
he's going down.
Does it sound good? Does it sound good?
Sounds good coming out of your mouth. Yeah,
Gitmo?
Gitmo.
Gitmo. Yeah, Gitmo. It's amazing. You know, Bob, my buddy Bob Corn Revere pointed out to me that in the Washington Post today, there were two stories just a couple pages apart. One says, U.S. shifts policy on Geneva Conventions. Okay, it's about, the Bush administration has agreed to apply the Geneva Conventions to all terrorism suspects in U.S. custody, bound to the Supreme Court's recent rejection of policies that have imprisoned hundreds for years without trials. The Pentagon announced today that it has called military officials to adhere to the conventions in dealing with al-Qaeda detainees. Okay, that's saying, okay, we were wrong, we're going to do that. A couple pages later, it's Bush's way or the highway on Guantanamo Bay, or Gitmo, as me and Dennis Miller call it. As Congress opens hearings yesterday on the treatment of terrorism detainees, the Bush administration's views were neatly summarized by Stephen Bradbury, the Justice Department lawyer, serving as lead witness. The president, Bradbury said, is always right. So we got, I'll explain everything I know about this issue, then you can call in and explain to me more, please. 866-570-PEN, 7366, penradio@gmail.com, penradio.com. We have got a bunch of people that we believe had something to do with terrorism against the U.S. and against the powers of good. We have them detained in a place that Dennis Miller fondly calls Gitmo. And down there, we have been not giving their names out, not giving them trials, and doing certain things like having dogs around them, which I believe is a bad thing, and tying them naked to a wall, which I believe is a good thing. And we've been doing these things, and that's against the Geneva Conventions. And just to make sure that we're all on the same page here, the Geneva Convention is not a hall in Switzerland, right?
Where, if you leave off the S, yeah.
Yeah. Where you can have your business meetings. This is conventions, and these are the conventions we agree on for war. I've got a lot of problems here right from the very beginning in that I don't understand rules for war. That is something so goofy to me that you can decide, oh, we're going to do war, but we're going to play fair. It seems when you're going to say this is the way we do war, we're going to play fair, that you've already gone outside of my definition of war. If you are able to agree on the Geneva Conventions, you should be able to agree not to go to war. I guess this is my naive, you know, high school point of view. And this is what we're going to bump into all the way through this. 866-570-PEN, 7366. 866-570-7366. If you have a phone that doesn't have the letters on it, so you can't spell out my name on the phone, which I know in your heart you're dying to do. But it's 7366. Wait a minute. PennRadio@gmail.com, PennRadio.com. Here's the problem. Everybody's always screaming at me, there are shades of gray, Penn. Things are not black and white. seems to me a lot of times things are black and white. There is a right or wrong. There is a good and bad. And the middle ground is just adding a little bit of evil to the good. I don't see where that gets you at all. My idea is that war is what you do when everything else has failed. So if you and I are having an argument, right, and we're fighting like crazy, Godot, and then all of a sudden we decide that our argument is going to go to the next level and we start hitting each other, do we follow rules in that? I guess we do, right? The rule is we'll hit each other, we won't pull a gun. We'll hit each other, we won't knee each other in the balls or something. I guess that's essentially what they're trying to do with the Geneva Conventions. And I guess that's okay, although I sat once and on an airplane. I sat next to a guy who started up a conversation with me, which I usually try to avoid. But I was sitting next to a guy, and listen, I know he could have been monkeying with me, right? But he was talking about, and this is before I had done any TV or anything, so he had no reason to monkey with me, so I'd tell the story on the radio or something, because he didn't know, he would be more surprised than anybody that I was on the radio. But he started talking about how he designs guidance for nuclear missiles. That's his job, okay? That's what he did. And he was talking about the rules of war. I said, "Well, you against nuclear war? You know, I mean, you do these guidance systems. Do you feel good about nuclear war?" He said, "Yeah, I feel great about it." And I said, "What do you mean?" He said, "My entire family, everyone that I loved, was killed by a drunk driver. What do I care about nuclear war?" And that was kind of the end of the conversation. I wanted to just say in the truth and reporting thing. That is not actually where the conversation went. The conversation went that way, except his answer included more obscenity than we like to do on Free FM, than the FCC likes us to do. There was quite
not that we like to do.
Yeah, not that we like to do.
More than the FCC will allow.
Yeah, and more than CBS wants, because they're following the FCC guidelines. Sure. So CBS has their rules, they're our bosses. And same thing with chemical warfare, you know. They decided that chemical warfare was an inhumane way to fight a war. And I don't know what the humane way to fight a war is. And also, if you put a limit on what the dangers are, what you can use in war, doesn't that just make war more likely? I mean, shouldn't we be terrified? Wasn't the idea that nuclear arms were a deterrent? Isn't that accurate? You know, North Korea is going to go nuclear. Don't we just pave them? I mean, I don't know. I just don't know. My idea is I would like to be a peacenik as long as I can. And then once you cross that line, I think you've crossed the line into crazy reaction and you just do anything you can to destroy the other guy. You're looking at me like I'm crazy. What's your point of view on this, Kudo?
My point of view is you probably follow the Geneva Conventions until you're losing. I think once you're losing, you do anything you can to get back on top. You know what I mean? If we're not sending out the Gitmo Bay...
You like saying it, didn't you?
It was fun.
You feel like, babe, say Gitmo Bay.
Gitmo.
I don't want to get off on a rant here or anything. But so you can say
if
Gitmo.
If we're not...
Even though you're, you know, your second banana here, I'll let you say Gitmo.
Thank you.
As long as you don't get the music on Monkey Tuesday.
Yeah.
You don't get... There's no... good. We haven't decided... That there'll be a Gitmo Wednesday, so you don't really get music for that yet. But so you're saying that the winner should follow it, and I guess the reason you follow
I think both sides should follow it, and yet they don't.
Okay, why should they?
If you were losing and being held down,
you'd pull a gun.
You'd pull the gun.
Yeah,
at that point.
But so this is really weird.
Within some restraints, I think choosing military targets is probably better than choosing civilian targets.
Because of morale things.
Yeah.
Is there something about the Geneva Conventions that makes it more logical for people to follow them? I mean, you get world opinion on your side, right?
Yeah. I think you want your prisoners treated well, and so you should treat the other prisoners well.
But those prisoners are people that we didn't bother killing, right?
Yes.
I mean, I don't know. I don't know how. And the other thing I don't understand, and boy, I think that, phones are already going, but we'll have them keep going. 866-570-PEN-7366. We're talking about Gitmo. And if you want to, there's a few reasons to call. If you have a good opinion on Gitmo, the idea is, should we follow the Geneva Conventions at Guantanamo Bay? I'd be better off saying Gitmo, because I don't really know how to understand. I don't know how to pronounce Guantanamo. I think that's probably why Dennis Miller does that. Should we follow the Geneva Conventions? If you have prisoners that are you suspect of terrorism, what do you owe them? Do you want to go with the Washington Post story that says U.S. shifts policy on Geneva Conventions in terms of Gitmo, or do you want to go with it's Bush's way or the highway on Guantanamo Bay? Because both of these articles appear in the same newspaper, the Washington Post, the same day. The Bush people seem to be saying, well, they've done this. There's a little different thing now. Now they're saying, well, we didn't have to follow them. We didn't have to follow them. They're not really soldiers. They're not really POWs. That was the argument.
Enemy combatants.
Yeah, they're not enemy combatants, they were saying.
No, they're saying they are enemy combatants because that term is technically different from prisoner of war.
Oh, it is. Okay. So they're saying they are enemy combatants, so we don't have to follow the Geneva Conventions.
Right.
And then There's this Supreme Court ruling that says, yes, you do, and their argument is essentially, oh, yeah, well, we were following them all the time. Well, that's the argument they're using.
Except that we know right here, number one, names of prisoners of war must be sent immediately to the Central Tracing Agency. We didn't do that. I'm pretty sure we didn't do that.
Yeah, we didn't.
No, we just now released them.
They're also supposed to be able to get packages from home. Right?
Yeah, yeah.
They're trying to make war much. Not saying that even under the Geneva Conventions, I'd be happy in war. I'm not saying it's a cakewalk. I'm not saying it's a really pleasant thing. But you can do that now. Let's take a phone. I'm going to take a phone call because I got some other stuff to say about this, but I don't think any of it's valid because I think I'm an ignorant nut on this issue. Let's talk to Delilah.
Dahlia.
Dahlia.
Hello?
Is it Dahlia?
Yeah, it's Dahlia.
Okay. I'm sorry, Dahlia. Okay,
yes.
Dahlia. This is Penn. How are you doing?
Good. How are you?
I'm doing very well, but I'm deeply in over my head on this subject, as you can probably tell.
Well,
so go on, take it.
Well, what you were talking about as far as the Geneva Conventions about rules of war, I think it was mostly meant to protect our soldiers when they were taken into combat, as far as them not being taken into torture. Mm-hmm. Also, the atrocities of like World War II is like the bloodiest war. I think everyone was trying to prevent that from ever happening. And when you were talking about nuclear wars, nuclear weapons, Russia, that was the reason we never went to war, because it was like mutually assured destruction.
Sure.
So I'm all for giving everyone nuclear weapons.
Yeah, well, I know there's a lot of logic. I mean, during the Cold War, the point of view was, isn't this awful that we all have nuclear weapons? And the crazy people, the conservative creeps, said, no. Mutually assured destruction will mean that we won't have a real war.
Yeah.
And they were right. You know,
they were absolutely
it's
right.
One of those cases where the creeps were right. I know it's to protect our soldiers, but why do you want to make war more pleasant? Should we make it as unpleasant as possible so that we don't do it?
I think it's kind of taking into consideration that no matter what human nature, we're always going to go to war.
Mm-hmm.
So try to make it as least brutal as possible, you know?
But if that's the case, why don't the Geneva Conventions just say soldiers will play checkers against one another in air-conditioned rooms? I mean, if that's allowed, if the Geneva Conventions, if we're going to follow them, why don't we make them something really cool? It'll be air-conditioned. We don't want to make them play checkers for too long.
You know what? I'd be all for that.
You'd be all for that with nuclear weapons that everybody has,
Everyone
right?
have nukes and have them pointed at each other, and nobody will go to war.
Okay. Well, it seems like an idea. But I need more people to explain this. Thanks a lot for calling. And let's talk to Jennifer.
Sorry, I got the wrong one. Sorry. There we go.
How are you doing, Jennifer?
Great. I got a story. Back several years ago, we had our troops in Somalia.
Yes, we did.
And my ex-husband was one of them. He was a medic in the army.
Uh-huh.
So he was given a pistol in order to defend himself, and he was shot at. And he had to turn around and shoot the guy. And then because of the Geneva Convention, he then had to treat him.
Oh, yeah. Wow.
So he was very messed up psychologically when he came home from that, and he's never been the same. So my point is, I think the Geneva Convention should only apply if both sides agree to it.
So let me get this straight. I mean, he really did. This is not theoretical. This is an actual story about your ex-husband. He shot a guy, did not kill him.
Right.
And then had to go over and treat him?
Had to treat him. Had to save his life.
Oh, man. And did he successfully save his life?
Yes.
Wow.
Did he poke his finger in the bullet hole and squirm it around some?
I'm not sure, but he did save his life, and he's psychologically traumatized.
And what kind of, I mean, we can imagine, but do you have any symptoms of his trauma you can tell us?
He just doesn't like to talk about it. A lot of post-traumatic stress. I mean, we're still friends, and he's just never, I can just tell you, he's just always been off. He's just never been the same because he had to firsthand witness what he did to another human being. I mean, and it was his own defense, but then had to turn around and face it and help him.
That's astonishing. I mean, even, no one has to do that. I mean, police don't have to do that. At least someone else is doing the medical treatment. I mean, shooting someone must be one of the most traumatic things that can happen to you. I mean, just right up above getting shot.
Right.
And then having to go over and actually, it's a weird kind of penance and guilt. And there's also some sort of happiness because it was him and not you. Man, right. that is just one of the most difficult psychological things I can imagine. So are you drawing, you drew some conclusion from this, but I was so kind of thrown off balance by the actual story that I didn't get it. What is your conclusion?
My conclusion is, you know, one side should only have to agree to the Geneva Convention if the other side does. Otherwise, all bets are off.
Okay. So you're saying that Al-Qaeda was not following in any way the Geneva Conventions.
Oh, correct. They were dragging our soldiers through the street.
Absolutely. So that since they are not, then we should not have to, and because we are not, they should not have to, and it spirals down into whatever you do, right? You can do anything you want. Is that right?
Well, yeah, because there's no incentive for them to hold up the Geneva Convention, and terrorists are never going to anyway.
Exactly. I mean, terrorists, I don't think would anyway. Although, you know, terrorism is the way to fight if you, as Michael Godot said, are definitely going to lose. You know, they wouldn't have a chance in a fair fight, so they go to, you know, that's the guy. If you're going to be fighting Mike Tyson, kick him in the nuts, right?
Exactly.
I mean, you are not going to fight fair when you're fighting with someone who's better than you. Well, that's a tremendously bothersome story, Jennifer.
And definitely.
Thanks so much for calling and telling us
Thank
that.
You.
It must be difficult for you to talk about. Thanks a lot, Jennifer.
Thanks.
That's one of those stories. You know, it's not like any get his face ripped off by a bear. That's one of the stories. That's an easy one. You just kind of go, ah! But that one, the more I roll that around in my head, the more it troubles me, going back and having to treat them. You wouldn't think, you know, because you get to do the good afterwards, that there's some sort of redemption to it, but the sentence she said of he had to see the damage that he did after he had done it. You don't seem as freaked out by this.
I don't. I don't feel as freaked out about this as you do for some reason. I think if he was trying to shoot me, I would go back and save him. If I had the opportunity, I would also tease him. Hi, I'm saving your life. Remember how you're about to shoot me? I'm a person.
So also the guy who shot also has the same dilemma. He was trying to kill this guy,
right?
Maybe even more so. Maybe
right.
even more so.
You know, Bobcat says, you know, I don't want to go to war. I don't want to be over there shooting some fat little comic who yells in his act. You know, you have to realize that these are people.
Yeah. Oh, well, that's really beautifully put. Bobcat's
yeah.
good.
Well, there you go.
Okay, we're gonna talk more about Gitmo, and it's already we don't have a strong opinion. It's just we can say Gitmo and be just like Dennis Miller. 866-570-PEN. That's 7366. Hi, this is Penn. Welcome back here. This is the big Penn Jillette Show. Sitting here with Michael Godot, the secret Tour de France rider, 866-570-PEN, 7366. And today we're in over our heads. We're talking about stuff we really, really don't know we're talking about, which is all I would ask about other people on the radio and TV. If they just would say that, I'd feel better about them. Hi, I'm with the news. I don't have any idea what I'm talking about. The only reason we're talking about this Geneva Conventions being followed or not down in Gitmo Bay is because I heard Dennis Miller say Gitmo. And it sounded like a fun word to say. We're going to get back to that, but I'm going to kind of add to that just a really goofy thing here. On the front page of the New York Times today, and I guess it's been picked up everywhere, there's a article, a headline, front page, that says U.S. terror targets petting zoo and flea market, with a big question mark, which is why I did the big raising my voice at the end. This is written by Eric Lipton in the New York Times. It reads like a tally of terrorist targets that a child might have written. Old McDonald's petting zoo, the Amish country popcorn factory, the Mule Day parade, the Sweetwater flea market, and an unspecified beach at the end of a street. A Street. This is the Department of Homeland Security has released a report today that these are unusual and out of place sites who they think might be attacked
right.
by Al-Qaeda.
This is not the terrorist list.
No.
They did not find this on someone's computer that they captured.
Right.
This is the list that they made up in their home states.
Right, and they made it up in their home state because they're getting Homeland Security money based on how many
sites
these targets
protected,
they have.
Yeah.
And Nevada, I'm proud to say, is, 35th in population, and we're 36th on the list of money we shouldn't get for Homeland Security. So we're doing something right. We're being humble, like Vegas always is, the most humble city on the planet, because we have New York, we have Paris, we have Rio, but we don't have a casino called Las Vegas. You can't get more humble than that. But what's killing me is how would they even pretend to get? Wouldn't they say this plant that makes Sanders belt? Sanders, why would they say petting zoo? Because they're afraid they're going to bomb a llama. Bomb a llama. Hey, people, it's Bomb a Llama Wednesday. Let's just see how that rolls off. Bomb a llama Wednesday.
I like Bomb a Llama
This
Wednesday.
Is the stupidest art. Bomb a llama Wednesday. Osama bin Laden, Bomb a llama Wednesday. Bomb a llama Wednesday. Bomb a llama Wednesday. It's the stupidest article ever. We're just deciding the fight against terrorism.
If they're sending money, I think that my car is in danger.
Exactly. I mean, when you turn it into who can get the most money, it turns into this saying that they're going to get, the Amish popcorn stand. The end of this article is fabulous. This is Mr. Lehman is the man who owns Amish country popcorn factory. He says, I'm out in the middle. I should do my Amish accent, but I'll spare
He's
you.
He's not Amish.
Okay, no, he just owns it. Okay. I'll just do my Penn Jillette accent then. I'm out in the middle of nowhere, says Mr. Lehman, whose business in Bern, Indiana, has 5 employees and grows and distributes popcorn. We are nothing but a bunch of Amish buggies and tractors out here. No one would care. But on second thought, he came up with an explanation. Maybe because popcorn explodes. Someone wrote in when Michael Goodeau said if he were losing, he would not follow the Geneva Conventions. Someone has written in, someone by the name of Ken. It seems to me that if you're actually winning big and no one can stand up to you, then you really don't have to follow the Geneva Conventions either. Geneva Conventions are probably only useful if there's some force that can help uphold them, like, I guess, public opinion. Let's take a few phone calls here. I want you to remember, before you come on the line, this is Penn Jillette. I'm sitting across from Michael Goodeau. We do not know what we're talking about. Anything we say on this show should be taken with a grain of salt. Of course, I would spread that to everything you read or hear anywhere should be. But anyways, let's go with David. Let's talk to David here. What's up, David? This is Penn.
Hey, Penn. How's it going?
Never better, boss. How are you?
Not too bad. Trying to clear up a little bit why these guys that are being held as terrorists in Guantanamo Bay are not getting what people should say rights as far as, like, the Geneva Convention.
Take me to school.
My wife is an attorney in the Air Force. Mm-hmm. As far as I understand from her explanation is, the Geneva Convention is made up of, I don't know how many groups of countries that have signed this Geneva Convention. Terrorists are not recognized by any of these countries.
Mm-hmm.
So, therefore, they are not held, they don't have any rights because they're not part of that Geneva Convention. They don't have a specific country to back them.
But wasn't that the argument that was given to the Supreme Court that they rejected?
I'm not sure. I didn't hear that argument, but I was just trying to clear that up.
Idea is if a country, if Al-Qaeda were a country, they would be entitled to all these. But the fact that Al-Qaeda is not a country but a terrorist group that's among many countries, I guess including our own, that they don't get those rights. It's not a country going to war. What did you say? What did you say the term you wanted to use was? Combatants, right?
Enemy
combatants that aren't soldiers.
Yeah, that's kind of the deal, is because they don't have a specific country. They say they don't have any of those rights. That's why they get held forever, don't get to see attorneys and all that stuff. That's all I was trying to explain was, that's kind of their gist behind it. I don't get the whole deal myself.
Yeah, how do you feel about it morally?
Morally? I don't know. I mean, it's a toss-up with me. I mean, at the same time, these people need to get some kind of representation. I mean, I don't know. I mean, half those people are probably just you know, Joe Schmo that was on the street at the wrong place at the wrong time, and they're never going to know that until somebody gets a chance to say, hey, look, I was just there. I'm not part of this group. But if they're not, they don't have an attorney to speak to, then how are they going to represent themselves? So.
Yeah, well, that's why, you know, that's why you have trials, so that doesn't happen. Thanks a lot. Thank you so much, David. You know, that's one of the things that I'm really interested in. You know, a friend of mine, I'm not going to say my friend's name on this one, but a friend of mine says that he would rather be killed than humiliated. I mean, when the pictures came out of the stuff done at Gitmo, like the naked and having to be in piles and stuff, and he said that he would much rather be killed than be treated like that. And for me, I don't feel like I would rather do the stuff I would normally do on Letterman anyway than be killed. I don't understand humiliation is that horrible a thing. I'm more concerned with physical. I guess because my life is humiliation, I'm fine with it. I have no problem. I'm used to it. I'm used to humiliation.
A good email here from Peter. Most of the people at Gitmo had no connection to Al-Qaeda. Mm-hmm. They're probably innocent of any crime at all. We were paying $25,000 a head for enemy combatants.
Wow. Is that what it costs you there?
Well, no, that's what we were paying for people turning in enemy combatants. That was the reward.
Oh, really? So 25 grand we were paying, so this is what you get.
Right. And these people have no opportunity to prove their innocence. They don't have a trial.
Right, there's no trial at all.
Yeah.
But that's going to change right now because we're now following the Geneva Conventions, or is anything the president says goes? We don't know anything about it, really, do we?
Well, that's the argument. You know what I mean? The president's going to do what he wants to do, and we're going to let him do it. So.
Let's take another phone call. Let's talk to Daniel right there. How you doing, Daniel?
Hey, what's up, man?
Nothing much, man. What's up?
You know, I have one point on agreement with you, Penn. I have no idea what I'm talking about, but one thing that really strikes me with this whole Gitmo and the Geneva Convention thing is that it reminds me when I was a little kid, and you're playing tag, and, you know, you're playing a game, and all of a sudden this one kid just kind of pops up and just makes up his own rules, just kind of ruins the whole game.
Mm-hmm.
It just sounds so childish like that, you know? It's just ruining the whole... just ruining the whole flow of things. I'm not sure whether it's morally right to hold these people against their will, but at this point, I mean, how much freedom can we give these people to I mean, they're not, a lot of these people aren't even U.S. citizens, and we're giving them all these freedoms, and I mean, we want to give them all these freedoms, and I don't know. I'm really concerned about my family, about my welfare.
Uh-huh.
Maybe it's just the whole propaganda of you know, the fear and you know, scaring people to the point of just giving up our freedom. But I don't know. And I mean, it just scares me like that.
It's a really tough one, but you know, we also have to remember that not everybody who is locked up there is automatically guilty. I mean, certainly, if you had Osama bin Laden, if you had the real terrorists in some sort of prison setup, that argument about you know, they didn't play by the rules and therefore they don't get the rules back to them at least would have some substance. We don't even know if these people are guilty, and our legal system, which is the best in the world and works pretty damn well, isn't able to function in this. But of course, if you bring that stuff out in the trial, you might also do damage. It's a tough one. But thanks a lot for calling and agreeing that we don't know what we're talking about.
It's nice to have people to call in and say, I don't know what I'm talking about either.
I know. Well, I just want to make that very, very clear. This is really complicated stuff, and I would trust almost anyone ahead of us. But let's just bounce it around. Let's take a little break now, and then we'll come back and we'll take a lot of these calls. We have Gmails coming in. 866-570-PEN 7366. Penn Jillette and Mike Dudeau, Las Vegas, Nevada. We will be back. Yeah, this is Penn Jillette with Mike Dudeau on the free FM. 866-570-PEN. That's 7366. If you have letters on your phone, 866-570-PEN. 7366. PennRadio@gmail.com. PennRadio.com. Someone wrote in and said that, that the stacking of naked bodies was not at Gitmo. It was at Abu Ghraib. But Abu Ghraib is no fun to say at all because I don't have the confidence I'm saying it right. I think I'm not saying it right. Is there an E at the end of Grabe? No, it's Grab.
Grab.
Abu Ghraib. Grab. Yeah.
Go ahead.
But I have to say Gitmo because I think I say it better.
Sounds good.
Gitmo, I've heard Dennis Miller say, and he has such confidence in the way he pronounces things that I feel like I'm probably okay there. What did happen at Gitmo was the trashing of the Quran, right?
Yeah.
Which I see, boy, do I see nothing wrong with that. I don't know why, if you don't believe in the Quran, you can't desecrate it. I mean, I don't know why other people should have to follow your religion when they don't believe in it. And Christians do not believe in the Quran. And if these were Christians, why can't they desecrate that? And what these, I don't see why.
We're not in that club.
We're not in that club. We're not part of the club. So the Quran is nothing to us. If there are people that worship a book and you don't worship it, it doesn't mean anything to you at all. But that's a whole other story besides the fact that I made very clear to anybody who listens to this show that I wouldn't mind being put in a naked pile of people at all.
If there were dogs involved, you would.
Dogs I don't like. I do not like the dogs. I would tell you anything. You know, you put dogs snapping at me in a room, even patting a dog in the room with me, I'd give up all the secrets I have. You want to know how the bullet catch is done in the Penn and Teller show? Just bring in a dog, kiss him, and then come at me. it's just so disgusting. We have a letter here from Damon that I want to read, and as Godot points out, I said, is this a good letter? And Godot said, well, he knows more than us. Well, of course, he is from Beaver Dam, Wisconsin, which I don't know if that's a plus or a minus.
He has a lot of time to read the paper.
Gentlemen, he says. He starts with gentlemen.
He doesn't know anything, does he?
The only people to whom the Geneva Conventions apply, according to the conventions themselves, are those who are following the Geneva Conventions. Okay, it's this, I can wear a Mason ring because I'm not a Mason. For instance, one of the provisions is that you must distinguish yourself from the civilian population by wearing a uniform and carrying your weapon openly while in preparations for battle. Clearly, the detainees at Gitmo, he says Guantanamo, but I would say Gitmo, are not following that simple rule and do, in fact, take steps to make themselves appear more like the civilians, even putting civilians in harm's way as a means of turning world opinion against us. For this reason alone, and there are others, the detainees should not be afforded the same protections as someone who is actually willing to follow the conventions. Having said that, I agree with Penn, we should not be making war more pleasant. I think the Geneva Conventions are a joke and should be abolished. They only exist to hamstring the good while protecting the evil, as we are seeing in this case. Thanks for listening. Wow, that's a well-written letter. Even if he's wrong, I'm going with him. It's just well laid out, makes a lot of sense to me.
Everything is spelled properly.
No, it really is. You rarely get those. You rarely get those. Let's talk to John, okay?
Sure.
What's up, John?
Hi, Penn.
Hi.
I'd like to respond to two things. First, to the assertions that a couple of the callers have made, being that the only reason that a country should follow the Geneva Conventions and the guidelines laid out in it is if all of the parties have a mutual agreement to follow it,
right,
just like the letter you just read.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that therein lies the problem. We can't selectively apply the Geneva Convention because we can't afford to treat other human beings that way. Well, war is a horrible thing, and the Geneva Convention doesn't seek to turn it into people playing checkers in air-conditioned rooms.
One nut said that. One really bad nut said that.
Sure. But it seeks to mitigate the really awful things that do go on in war. And I think that if we say, well, because they aren't following it, we don't have to follow it. I mean, there are a lot of things that the Geneva Convention, there are a lot of protections that it puts in place. For example, preventing the wholesale slaughter of civilians.
Mm-hmm.
And I just don't think that many people would be comfortable with our country completely foregoing that. And
mm-hmm.
and I think just as moral human beings, we can't say, okay, well, they aren't going to follow the rules, so we can't.
So may I try to restate this to show that I understood it? What you're saying is that the Geneva Conventions are not a two-sided thing that people agree on in order to wage war, but rather the Geneva Conventions are a way of the people following it by saying this is the way we want to live, and it doesn't matter what the other side does. Is that right?
That's what I believe. Yeah. And to tie that into the whole Gitmo thing is...
It's fun to say, though, isn't it? Gitmo?
Gitmo.
Yeah, it's fun to say.
That's part of the reason I called today. I guess to tie that into Gitmo is I have to ask, what are we getting out of the way we're treating the people? And I've heard a lot that these, you know, techniques, you know, the dog snapping and everything else are being called interrogation techniques. But after 4 years of being held, you know, without a trial, without an attorney, I mean, what tactical value do the people that were continuing to hold them to that treatment have? And when will it eventually stop?
But isn't that their winning card, is that they won't tell us what they're getting out of these people because it's all secret? So we're supposed to believe that maybe these interrogation techniques are working and they just don't give us the information because we're civilians and that would be too dangerous?
Well, absolutely, but the lack of transparency is what's so damning to the process, to me at least, is that, you know, if they were gleaning all kinds of important tactical information out of it, then they should be proud to share that with the public, and it would make, you know, the threat of going to a encampment such as Gitmo that much more serious.
Uh-huh.
It would make the threat of capture that much, you know, it would give it that much more gravity, because if they knew that we were going to break people there and get them to give up their deepest, darkest secrets, then, you know, then they would not, they would try even harder to not be captured or, and taken alive by us.
And it just seems in terms of common sense, if we did have some information we were getting out of that, that it certainly weakens their moral position that we are on, you know, God is on our side. We cannot be broken. If we were breaking a few, it seems to destroy a lot of their propaganda. So I'm inclined to agree with you, and I very much take that side of we're coming around to the way I feel about capital punishment, which is that the government, the country, society should be better than the bad people it's dealing with, and that's what I always come down to. But thanks a lot for calling. You know, we're getting great callers on this. Maybe we should go in over our heads.
I think I agree with John. I think if we're going to be the good guys, we should be the good guys.
Yeah, you know, I think so, too. And I guess if you want to put
how
that...
How would Superman handle the people he gets?
Exactly.
Just ask yourself that question. What would Superman do? He would treat them reasonably.
You know, I really feel guilty now, because when I said the only things we knew about were juggling and funny monkeys, I think we also know a little bit about Superman.
We know a lot about
Superman.
I think we
showed that a few weeks ago, that we know a bit about Superman here and there. Yeah, I think that's really true. And also, if you want to put it in more cynical terms, throw out the morality, I also think in terms of the world looking at us, we should be the country, and we would be any country that I'm in, should be the country that is trying to be the best in the world.
I don't care about the public opinion.
You don't.
I care about what I'm doing in front of my mom. You know what I mean? I think you should behave responsibly.
Right.
Step up and say, you know what, this is the way we should treat people.
Well, there's no doubt about that. I was just trying to look at it from a cynical point of view.
Well,
and now
it.
You get on your high horse, what would you do in front of your mom? And you win. Okay, so you win. Exactly right. If it's immoral to torture people, it's immoral to torture people no matter who they are.
Absolutely.
Absolutely.
That's my point.
We worked out something here. We still don't know what we're talking about. Let's talk to Andy. What's up, Andy?
Sure.
Hey, how you guys doing today?
Never better, boss. How are you?
Pretty good. I got my opinion on the way these prisoners are treated. I think that they shouldn't be treated any different than they are right now, and I'll tell you why.
Mm-hmm.
A, they're not American citizens, half
right.
of them.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't think that they deserve the same rights that, you know, we, our people, fought for as far as, you know, freedoms,
sure.
things like that. And as far as what they're doing to them in the prisons, you know, the humiliation thing and whatever, that's nothing compared to, you know, our soldiers getting beheaded, things like that.
Uh-huh.
You know what I mean? And, you know, our Americans are over there being beheaded by them because they don't care, more or less, about, you know, human life or value of life.
But let me put this in really childish terms that I understand. Doesn't your argument boil down to two wrongs make a right?
No, not necessarily.
Okay.
I mean, I don't agree with it. I don't think it's right to do that. However, I don't think that they should be looking at what we're doing as being, you know, completely the most wrong thing that we could possibly be doing.
So you're saying that what we're doing is taking the high road because you're treating them better than they would treat us. What is kind of the high road? It's just a matter of degrees. Am I restating what you're saying correctly?
Yeah, that's pretty much what
okay.
it boils down to.
Okay, yeah. Yeah, that we're not perfect, but there's such atrocities we're dealing with that we have to take off the gloves a little bit, would be your argument. Is that right?
More or less. I mean,
okay.
The fact that they're going to sit there and defend these guys that are, you know, just completely killing at will and, you know, being, you know, wimps hiding behind car bombs and suicide bombers and things like that. I just don't understand how they could sit and defend that and say, well, you're not treating them fairly. Because you know what? If it came down to us or them, they're going to do them. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. And I think that we should have to do us in order to defend and keep, you know, the upper hand on the situation. Not necessarily say that we should go, you know, suicide bomb or anything like that, because I don't agree with that. But, I mean, if it comes down to using some serious force, I think we should have the okay to do it, you know?
Okay, thanks a lot. Thanks a lot for that point of view, Andy. Let's talk to you. You have something to say? You kind of leaned into the microphone.
No, that's all right.
Let's just go to Shane. Let's talk to Shane. Hey, Shane, this is Penn. How are you, sir?
Yeah, doing all right. I just wanted to say that when it comes down to it, things like the Geneva Convention, all of the little exceptions that we make in war really come down to actually being specifically so that we can placate the people who aren't actively involved in the war, the people back home, those of us who are sitting back here being peacenicks who don't want us to be at war at all, need to feel that we are being the good guys. We need to feel that even though we are in a war situation, that we're taking the high road and that we're treating people like people.
So it's kind of a PR thing. Let me just, I'm going to get way off the subject, Shane. You sound exactly to me like Jack Nicholson. Would you just say to me, Penn, you can't handle the truth?
that's pretty much it. I mean, any military strategist will try his best to reach his objective. But no, that's exactly it. We want to make sure that the people at home, really, we didn't know anything about Abu Ghraib. The public didn't know anything about what was going on until finally it got some media exposure.
Uh-huh.
We didn't realize that we weren't necessarily following the rules, or that we were pushing the envelope on the rules until it got exposure.
Uh-huh.
If we had been following the rules and they had looked into something like Abu Ghraib or, you know, Gitmo, then Gitmo, love it.
But anyway, it's fun saying that.
If they had gotten into that and we were following the rules, you know what? There wouldn't have been any controversy. We wouldn't be talking about this right now because we were following the rules.
Uh-huh.
And that would have actually served its purpose as a PR tool, but it didn't, because we didn't necessarily follow them, or we pushed the envelope. I read some of the things that they were doing, some of the interrogation techniques and everything, what was accepted, what wasn't. And, you know, we were pushing the edge almost all the time, because really we want any advantage we can get militarily, but we also want to remain human while we are performing inhuman acts.
Well, thank you. Thank you so much for calling, Shane. And thank you for talking so much like Jack Nicholson. I just love the sound of that voice. Very quickly, let's take Paul. We're almost near the end, Paul.
We're going to take Paul, okay.
But if you make your case quick, tell your story walking. How are you doing, Paul?
Good. How are you doing?
Very well, thanks.
Well, my case is that the Geneva Convention came about back in an era when the leaders of the countries that were at war were dignitaries, and they had different mindsets. Winston Churchill, you look at the you know, John F. Kennedy, they were men that were at war, and the Geneva Convention was set up to establish ground rules. In today's society, in today's era, those ground rules have changed. The document or the composure of the actual Geneva Convention either needs to be rewritten and brought into the 21st century to allow for these radicals. And I mean, there's a woman that was on the call.
I'm going to have to cut you off because the music's cutting you off. Please, please forgive me. But thanks so much for calling. And remember, this is Penn Jillette and Mike Dugo saying, we don't know what the hell we're talking about.